Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday and happy Sunday, wherever you may be in the USA or around the globe. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And today, if you are listening on Saturday on AM or podcast around the United States, is Christmas. Merry Christmas. Ho, 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 folks. You know, it's not often that my radio show falls on Christmas Day. I hope you are having an absolutely terrific Christmas. Great travels, if that's what you're doing. Fun with family and friends and good food and laughter. It is what we all need and what we all deserve. In fact, it's going to tie right into the show. I'm going to try and lighten up this show a little bit since this is Christmas. And even though the powers that be, evil and dark forces, are at play, we would hope that even they have slowed down just a bit on Christmas Day. Anyway, I will see what I can do to lighten up, but there is a bunch of stuff to bring to you. I have a fun kind of little historical segmentized story for you to begin with, and I'll give due recognition to the author of the book that I got these from, and I'll recommend the book to you too here in just a moment. We're going to talk a little bit about redistricting. Most of you probably don't know that there are huge battles going on around the United States over redistricting right now that could very well determine the outcome of scores of congressional races, which could determine the outcome of the 2022 elections, which could determine the outcome of the future of the United States. I'm going to bring you up to speed on some of them because it's kind of fascinating. It's kind of scary. It is part of the rough and tumble game of politics, and it is ongoing literally as I speak to you. I promised last week to bring you kind of the second part. We didn't get to it. Robert Malone's look at the corruption in medical journals and science. And I'm also going to go one step further. We're going to get into kind of the psychosis of COVID, because it is a psychosis. I'll explain more when we get there. And we're going to get into some rat-a-tat-tat. I'll try and keep it relatively light. I don't know. You know, Christmas Day. And we're going to finish up the show, no matter what, with some positive thoughts. Because, you know, in all this nonsense that's going on, in all this down is up, up is down, left is right, right is left, topsy-turvy, can't make sense of it planet right now, there are some really good things beginning to emerge after several years of, shall we say, angst and anger and frustration and bewilderment. The tide is turning. I don't know if you can feel it out there. I don't know if you can hear the creak of the timbers as the frigate turns around in heavy seas and begins to tack against an oncoming wind, but it is happening. I am feeling it, and I talk to lots of people in lots of places. So let's get started, shall we? And you could be munching on your turkey leftovers or your Christmas breakfast or whatever as we rock and roll here into the On the Right Side radio show. Well, first of all, let's start with some fun, historical, segmentized stories. And this comes from a book called Little Mistakes, Big Disasters. And it's written by Jared Nott, N-O-T-T. I recommend the book. It's fun reading. And he has 39 examples of the tiniest mistakes over the course of the last several hundred years of history, and in some cases a little bit further back, well, quite a bit further back. Tiny little things that changed in monumental ways the history of the planet or the history of a region. So let me tell you about a few of them. Let's go back to the year 2000, you know, the presidential elections. This is Palm Beach County, Florida. And the election commissioner down there leading up to the election, because there's a lot of older folks in Palm Beach County, she wanted to come up with a ballot that people could read quite easily and that they could understand and that they could vote with easily. I mean, her intentions were good. And it was called the Butterfly Ballot. Do you remember the Hanging Chads of 2000? Well, this, folks, is Palm Beach County's ballot. And in addition to being, although she intended it to be different, in addition to it being difficult to punch holes in and separate Chads from and all the other stuff that had to go on, the names of the three presidential candidates were kind of helter-skelter. Buchanan, who obviously was the right to the right of Bush, and then Gore. Except Buchanan was in between Bush and Gore. And many people made a mistake on these ballots. There were over 5,000 ballots thrown out. We don't know what those votes were, really. We do know that Bush carried the state of Florida by 456 plus or minus votes. And there were 5,000 ballots thrown out. And actually, the Supreme Court stopped the counting of the ballots for the umpteenth time. You can probably remember that photograph of the guy holding up the ballot with a magnifying glass, looking to see which Chad was detached, where the hole was punched. And George Bush was elected President of the United States. Now, I am no fan of Al Gore's. In fact, quite the contrary. But you know, Al Gore was adamantly opposed to involvement in the Middle East, and particularly the war in Iraq. And that was $7 trillion ago. And many thousands of American lives and hundreds of thousands of American wounded. One can only wonder how history would have changed had this poor gal down there in Palm Beach County not tried to come up with a ballot that would be more easily read by the elderly voters in her election district. Interesting. Then we have an ancient kind of little historical story. Cyrus the Great. Okay, this is the guy, if you remember, he freed the children of Israel. You know, he was a Persian. He kind of created the Persian Empire. And one key element in that was the defeat of the Christus Emperor, who was allied with the Spartans at that time, probably the most fierce warriors on the planet, at least within the medieval world, or actually long before the ancient world, shall we say. Well, Cyrus invaded his enemy's territory, and the battle raged back and forth. Their city, which was called Lydia, was on top of these cliffs, kind of overlooking the sea. Very difficult to scale, quite protected, and Cyrus pretended that he was losing the battle, and he sailed away. But he was a crafty, crafty military guy. And the Spartans, as he knew they would, thinking that he had been defeated, left, leaving the armies of the, Empire and the Christus Emperor alone. Well, Cyrus sailed back after 5 or 6 days of kind of feinting the retreat, and the battle was locked again. But it was a seesaw battle, because there was no way for Cyrus to scale these cliffs. And then one of the soldiers up on the walls of the city on top of the cliffs dropped a helmet. And Cyrus's army, or some of them, saw this soldier from the city follow this secret footpath down the face of the cliff to retrieve his helmet. Well, an advanced force was sent by Cyrus up this secret path that had been revealed by a soldier losing his helmet off the wall. And they opened the gates for Cyrus's army. Lydia was taken, and the war was won. And it changed the entire face of the Mideast, and it cemented the power of the Persian Empire for many, many, many years. Interesting. A helmet falling off a wall. Then there was the assassination of Hitler. Or the attempted assassination of Hitler. You all know about the bomb at the bunker that didn't work. But there was another attempt. And to be honest with you, even I didn't know this, and I follow this stuff. So Hitler was induced to fly to Russia by the German generals that wanted to knock him off. And they devised a bomb, which they concealed in a seemingly innocent-looking freight box, which they put in his plane. And this bomb was supposed to trigger by a pin collapsing as it was dissolved by acid on a plate within the box. And the generals, after Hitler took off to fly back to Berlin, paced nervously for half an hour, 45 minutes, which is when they figured the bomb would go off. But much to their concern and dismay, several hours later they got word that Hitler landed safely in Berlin. And it was found later that the pin, this little pin in the middle of this bomb mechanism, had somehow twisted and bent and had not allowed the acid to get through the plate to detonate the bomb. I can't tell you all the mechanics of it, but think about how many millions of lives would have been saved. Think about how the face of Europe and Eurasia would have been changed by that one simple act, one little pin. Then we have Santa Anna and the Texas Wars, Santa Anna versus Sam Houston. And Santa Anna, he had a kind of love for drugs. He liked opium, and he loved women. I mean, he fancied himself, you know, quite the swashbuckling little emperor. In 1834, he had pretty much deposed all his other parliaments and all the, I don't want to call them state legislatures, but the state governing associations of the various states of Mexico, which, by the way, included Texas. And seven of those states had risen up in revolt, and he had crushed every one of them except Texas. All the other six were below the Texas-Mexico line, which at that time, of course, didn't really exist because it was the country of Mexico. And his last conquest that he planned, and he was quite sure that he could suffer no defeat, his last conquest that he planned was Texas. And Sam Houston's army had dwindled to 700 men. They were eating dried corn cobs. Many had no boots. They were kind of on their last legs as an army, although they had a pretty domineering rebel spirit. And Santa Anna kind of bottlenecked his army, which, by the way, was 25,000 men, although he had dispersed it in a number of different directions. He bottlenecked his army on this peninsula. And the Texans, who were kind of a wild and rowdy bunch, wanted to attack at once, but Sam Houston held them back. They wanted to attack at dawn on a certain day because the land gave them a strategic advantage. But Houston insisted, even though literally some of his men were close to mutiny, they wanted to get into the fight. He insisted that they would not attack until he gave the order. And without warning to his army, to his 700 men, they mustered quickly around 3:30 in the afternoon and went on the offensive. That happened to be, as Houston knew, the siesta time of the Mexican army. And Houston also had word from good intelligence, a spy in the Mexican camp, that at that point in time, Santa Anna was likely to be under the influence of opium and under the influence of a beautiful Mexican, half-black, quote-unquote, slave woman that he had taken quite the fancy to, beautiful lady. And the battle was over in 18 and a half minutes. Houston suffered less than 12 casualties. The deal was done, as they say. And Santa Anna came out half-clothed from the tent from his various activities behind the canvas and rode away on a black horse, later, of course, to be captured when he was identified by his men, unwittingly, who at that time were prisoners and surrounded by the Texans. So that gal's name, by the way, became known in the annals of Texas as the Yellow Rose of Texas. Her real name was Emily Morgan. So there is a, shall we say, a mistake of lust and drugs. A tiny little mistake in a very short period of time that created the country of Texas and later became literally a quarter of the United States of America. Let's go to 1919, the Versailles Treaty. World War I was over, and the Allies wanted to split up all the goodies, you know. And the goodies, as they split it up, as a little side note, became many of the conflicts of later in the 19th century. The Ottoman Empire, the wars between, the armored wars between the Allies and Rommel, the Desert Fox of the German Panzer divisions, the birth of Israel. Huge historical significance to the Versailles Treaty. But one of the things you probably didn't know was that Many of the trenches in World War I on the European front were dug by Chinese workers, 100,000 of them, actually. And you might not also know that Japan had been fighting against Germany in World War I, and they had been pretty decisive in their defeat of German forces in the Pacific. So when all the Allies got together at Versailles to divvy up the spoils, so to speak, Japan wanted two things. Japan wanted all the German concessions in the Pacific, any German islands, any territories, etc., and any business interests that Germany had had in the Pacific and the Asian area. And they wanted the Versailles Treaty to mention and to reference specifically that the world would give equality to all people, including the Japanese and the Chinese. Australia, which has always thought of itself as a white island in an Asian sea, their prime minister at that time was a guy by the name of Tony Hughes, and he flatly said no. He was not going to agree to equality between whites and Asians. And Woodrow Wilson, so anxious to make a peace, remember Woodrow from our educational series, our first progressive president, in the end went along with this. Instead of inserting, literally, you could have taken a sentence out of the Declaration of Independence that was written by Thomas Jefferson, all men are created equal, etc., and been done with this. It did not happen. California also was whispering in Woodrow Wilson's ear because the powers that be in California at that time were deathly afraid of an influx of cheap Chinese and Asian labor. My, how times have changed between then and now, huh? To make a long story short, it was at that point that the Chinese began to not trust democracy and began to not trust the President of the United States at that time, Woodrow Wilson. They didn't feel that he had honored or would honor his word in the future. And the Japanese felt the same. And in the tiny mistake, the lack of a sentence in the Versailles Treaty was born Japan's aggression, which became World War II and Pearl Harbor. And also, the Versailles Treaty was signed on May 3rd, which gave birth to the May 4th movement in China, which was, in effect, Mao Zedong. And it is what many historians believe steered China away from democracy and into communism. Now think what a different world it would be today had that one sentence been inserted. Had China been a democratic country? Had Japan been happy and not pushed to war 25 years later? Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. All right. That's our little historical rendition for Christmas Day. Now, let's talk a little bit about redistricting, shall we? I mean, it's a fairly mild subject, kind of. There are lawsuits flying all over the United States in a whole bunch of states. I'm talking about a whole bunch of states. Within the states, many of the lawsuits brought by Democrats trying to interfere with the redistricting process of Republican legislatures. You know, this is one of the things that Eric Holder really worked on in advance of Barack Obama's election and re-election. And it's going on again because redistricting takes place after each census. And you already know that there's a number of red states that gained seats and a number of blue states that lost seats, other than Colorado that gained one. And redistricting basically redraws district lines, and it is kind of a time-honored American tradition back to the beginning that when you redraw a district, you try and protect your incumbent. If you're a Republican legislature and the Republicans are the incumbents in Congress. And the Democrats try and do the same. And there's a few lawsuits brought by Republicans in blue states, but most are by Democrats in red states, trying to dampen the effect of a Republican-controlled legislature that basically draws the lines as it wishes. And in this case, because we have a lawless federal government who doesn't believe in the Constitution, the 10th Amendment, or the provisions of the Constitution, which solely vest this power of districting in the legislatures of the states, the DOJ is involved in several states, including suing Texas over its redistricting plan, which, it really doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of getting anywhere in the courts, but it does slow down the process. It does divert Texas's attention from the upcoming 2022 elections. In fact, there is already a Supreme Court case, and it was back in July. And in that case, the Supreme Court upheld an Arizona law that the DOJ had sued on down there. And the DOJ claimed the usual Democratic Marxist talking points. You know, it suppressed voters and blah, 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 racist, you know, the whole litany. And the Supreme Court threw it out, said no, Arizona had the absolute right to draw its districts the way it wanted. Well, the DOJ is now trying that in Texas. And the result is, I'm quite sure, going to be the same. By the way, this is the third lawsuit that the DOJ has filed against Texas. They filed it against the abortion law. They filed for on the redistricting. They've filed it on the Voter Act, etc., etc., etc. I mean, one thing you got to give the Democratic Marxists is they never go away. They never go away. And they've claimed that the Republicans in Texas have violated the Federal Voting Rights Act by diluting voting blocks and, you know, dampening minority turnout and all the rest of the stuff. We'll see. The DOJ has a large burden to prove, folks. And it is not going to happen. You know, one of the things they're claiming is that the Republicans have targeted and diluted the Latino vote. Well, you know, 50% of the Latinos in Texas are now voting Republican. It's kind of what they're really arguing is that the Republicans are diluting their own voting bloc. That's not the only nonsense going on this redistricting. There are lawsuits going on in California, in Virginia, in North Carolina, in South Carolina, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Ohio, etc., etc., etc. And Virginia, by the way, and Virginia. This process of redrawing legislative and congressional district maps, I forgot to mention that when you redistrict every 10 years, you're not only redistricting and redrawing the congressional district maps for the United States House of Representatives, you are also redrawing the legislative maps for the legislative districts for the House and the Senate, or if you're back east, the House of Commons. You know, every state has kind of their own name for the various levels of their legislature. Anyway, the arguments in these suits within the states are the same kind of as the DOJ is bringing in Texas, but they are internal to the states. They are intrastate, not interstate. And, you know, they're arguing that new boundaries undermine voters' rights, and the lawyers for the state are defending the district boundaries, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In Ohio, the Ohio Redistricting Commission, what they've drawn is now up at the Ohio Supreme Court. And the Democrats are saying that the maps have been, quote, drawn primarily to favor or disfavor a political party, unquote. Well, that's really what the process is about, folks. That's what the process has always been about. To the winner go the spoils. That's the whole point of it. One of the things which is really kind of pushing this process, though, unlike processes in other time periods, like time immemorial in United States history, is that you have the 2022 midterm elections looming. Obviously, these maps are very important to that, but they're really important to primaries, to even get to the point where you have candidates to run in 2022 for either state or federal positions. And the Democrats have kind of craftily waited to file their lawsuits until the last minute in a lot of these areas to try and hamstring, to try and cripple, or at least cause chaos, which is what they like to do. You know, out of chaos comes order. Remember our discussion over the last 2 weeks? And what they're trying to do is to delay the process, to delay the primaries, to somehow affect the election. And of course, we know that they have all sorts of other things planned to pull from their bag of tricks, having to do with COVID and, you know, safety and mail-in ballots and no ID. I mean, it's all coming at us, folks. They're going to try a repeat of 2020. It worked then. They're going to try and make it work now in 2022. And it's about their only hope, because right now they are significantly underwater. Although it's up to all of you and me and all of us to send in our money and to support these candidates and to volunteer our time to make sure there is no election or voter fraud at our various polling places and precincts. And I hope that you are planning to do that. It is key. It is one of the reasons we took back Virginia, because they were organized. 4,000 volunteers on the ground making sure that there was no fraud. And even then, there was some, but not enough to turn the election. Not the rampant fraud of 2020. We also have some elections going on and up in the Northeast. And this is kind of funny because those redistricting wars are between Democrats. Because, you know, Massachusetts and Vermont and Connecticut are pretty much blue. They ain't very red. And in those cases, the Democrats are eating their own because the progressives are fighting the moderates. And they're trying to redistrict, you know, these warring factions in those blue state legislatures. They're trying to redistrict so that either the progressives get more seats or the moderates get more seats. You've kind of seen that play out, and I'm going to bring it up in the rat-a-tat-tat, in Joe Manchin, a moderate Democrat, but still a Democrat, shooting down the Build Back Better plan this week. And then all the nonsense that has been dumped on his head by the progressive, the Marxist wing of the Democratic Party. All right, why don't we get into, because I want to get to this good news part of this show, since it's Christmas. Why don't we get into the Scientific Journal censorship material we started to talk about last week. If you didn't listen to last week's show, listen to it. We talked about Perdofsky and all the things that have been done to corrupt scientific journals, which are really the foundation of scientific dialogue and scientific communication in the scientific community. And when it comes to COVID, there's a psychosis. We're going to talk about that today. And these scientific journals, the ones we talked about last week, have been influenced by Chinese money. But there's other forms of money which have corrupted American science and corrupted American scientific dialogue, which is primarily through these peer-reviewed articles in scientific journals. So I posted the producers posted a video last week right under the audio bar. It's going to be posted again this week, along with several others, which we're going to mention as we go along through the show here. And this video is of Dr. Robert Malone. This guy is a world-renowned scientist and doctor. He is the inventor, believe it or not, of the mRNA and the DNA vaccine core platform technology, which is being used for the vaccines today. He is by no means an anti-vaxxer, although he is absolutely anti this jab for COVID. And he did an interview a few months ago with Sonia Elijah with Trial Site News out of the UK. YouTube took down Malone's interview. This is one of the top guys in the world, the inventor of the vaccines, quote unquote, the non-vaccines, the jabs that all the governments of the world and the globalists are all in lockstep trying to force us all to take. But YouTube took down his video. Yeah, okay. And the whole thing that Malone was trying to bring out in that video is that the alternative treatments for COVID, and there are many of them, and they are hugely successful so long as they are applied early in the disease, are being completely suppressed by these scientific journals. And of course, the scientific journal suppression is being echoed and mimicked by Fauci and the government and by mainstream media, their lapdogs. So he gave one example, okay? He and his scientific colleagues have been experimenting with therapeutic drugs for COVID. And they found that Celecoxib, that's CELECOXIB, which is kind of a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, and famotidine, that's FAMOTIDINE, which is a heartburn drug, believe it or not, that's sold under the brand name of Pepcid, right? You've heard of it. Led to improved outcomes if applied early to COVID-19 patients, including 100% survival. His paper's been rejected for publication innumerable times. This guy has been published 200 times in his lifetime. Huge. And Malone was also a guest editor of an outfit called Frontiers in Pharmacology. And they were going to publish an abstract of a peer-reviewed study by a guy by the name of Pierre Curie on ivermectin for COVID-19, which, folks, I will flat tell you, works. I am like living proof. And seven other folks I've shared these stories with you that I personally know and personally witness are the same. But when it went up on the website that was going to publish this peer-reviewed paper, there was a third party, anonymous, that complained, and it was pulled with no chance for resubmission. Gee, I wonder who that was. Could that have been, maybe Big Pharma or something, or maybe a globalist outfit? Who knows? Let me quote Malone on this happenstance. Quote, "That was completely inexplicable. Some third party complained to Frontiers and successfully had that pulled, even though it had passed peer review with an expert panel of peer reviewers unanimously, including senior reviewers from the FDA, unquote. Now, do you understand the levels of corruption which have to occur for this type of circumstance to happen? It's unbelievable. And Malone has a theory, and that is kind of working in tandem with scientific censorship. The left, the globalists, Big Pharma, as I'll explain to you in just a minute, they've started kind of a modern-day witch hunt, and they target physicians which don't toe the company line, so to speak. And Malone thinks it's like a three-step process. First, third parties complain about the physicians who are treating COVID-19 patients like 99.9% successfully early on in the disease. There are no patient complaints. They're getting cured. The next thing, once a third-party complaint is made, then medical boards have to open an investigation. Quote, basically, physicians are accused of the sin of administering licensed drugs off-label, which is about 30% of all prescriptions. Then these complaints are filed with the medical boards. Once the investigation process is initiated, the press is alerted, which subsequently writes multiple articles about the physician being investigated, destroying their reputation. I continue the quote. This destroys the credibility of the physician. They're typically fired from their hospital for creating a controversy. Often they are kicked out of their medical practice group and are basically forced to become free agents. It's a systematic attack that deprives those accused of their ability to earn a living while frightening others who might speak out into remaining silent. Now, here's the thing you're going to really love, folks. Last week we talked about China and their money influencing medical journals, like tens of millions of dollars. Well, now we have Big Pharma. And you know the way they do it? Because it's illegal for them to give money like directly to a scientific publication. They buy the reprints. They don't have to advertise. They don't have to buy stock. They just buy very large numbers of reprints of papers that these journals put out. And obviously, they make sure that the papers are favorable to Big Pharma's position. And the reprints are sold at a rather exorbitant price by the periodicals to the Big Pharma folks. And then the pharmaceutical companies hand the reprints out to physicians' offices. Huh. And these scientific journals have come to rely on this revenue, which happens to be a major motivation to continue printing research that's favorable to Big Pharma. Gee, imagine that. To hell with the public. Who cares about your health? We're making our moolah, we're selling our reprints, and we're suppressing stuff that you could read that could help you, or that could help your doctor help you. I quote Malone, quote, "It's another nefarious way that the pharmaceutical industry has figured out how to exert influence by bending the law. They don't have to disclose the conflict of interest because it's not a direct payment," unquote. By the way, Malone believes, you can watch the video, that what's going on right now in the medical and the scientific community is rampant lawlessness. I'm quoting. There's rules, there's regulations about bioethics which are being completely disregarded. There's experimentation without proper informed consent. This is like, you know, if you have gotten the jab or you have a friend who's gotten the jab, this is an emergency use experimental drug, folks. And you, by suppression of all this information, you have not been fully or properly informed, which is a violation of the Nuremberg Code. We're going to talk about that in a little rat-tat-tat, too. The FDA's Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, VRBPAC, you know, let's have our acronym here. They just voted, just a month or two ago, they voted unanimously for emergency use authorization of COVID-19 shots for children ages 5 to 11 years old. There was one abstention. This just shows you how corrupt science is. The abstention, his name is Dr. Michael Carrilla. He happens to be the director of the Division of Clinical Innovation, at the National Institute of Health, you know, the NIH, National Center for Advancing Translational Sciences. And a lot of people think that he's kind of the heir apparent to Fauci, and he lodged that vote in abstention so that they could have plausible deniability, you know, in case things go wrong, as they know they're going to. In fact, as they intend they do. So this is how nefarious and insidious and twisted and intertwined this whole medical, scientific, publishing, government, big pharma nastiness is. It's just outrageous. And at the same time, the CDC and the FDA and the NIH and these medical journals, by misrepresentation or by omission, i.e. not publishing for all the reasons we've discussed, they're manipulating data. And in the end, the science, particularly about COVID, is data, right? It's math. 2 + 2 = 4. Water runs downhill. There's either more vaccinated people in the hospital or there's more unvaccinated people in the hospital. You know the answer to that question if you've been listening to me. And there's a really strong financial incentive at the hospital level, okay? Let me quote Malone again, okay? Because all this is money-driven. That is what's corrupting the scientific and medical communities right now, not to mention the play for power by the globalists and their puppets in the government. Quote, there are strong disincentives for physicians to report information, in other words, about adverse reactions, including at the local level. And there are strong incentives for U.S. hospitals to over-report COVID deaths. I continue the quote. The average cost of hospitalized COVID per patient, the average case cost is between $300,000 and $400,000. And part of that is driven by the antiviral drug remdesivir. I've talked to you guys about this. This is the drug that Tony Fauci and his NIH band of treasonous cronies have patents on in terms of some of the ingredients, just as they do in the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines. Remdesivir does not help you at all. In fact, it will probably kill you. And it requires it to be administered through a drip system in a hospital. Do you see how all this money stuff ties in? Remdesivir is about $3,000 a dose. Ivermectin is $16. Hydroxychloroquine is about $7. In fact, the only thing really wrong with HCQ, ivermectin, and other therapeutic drugs is that they don't cost enough, and the money is not going to big pharma, folks. That is the truth of the matter. I'm going to finish up this little thing about Malone with a really, really interesting quote by him, something that we're going to get into in the coming weeks. Quote, if you follow the money, it all traces back to BlackRock and Vanguard Group, the two largest asset management firms in the world, which also control Big Pharma. They're at the top of a pyramid that controls basically everything, but you don't hear about their terrifying monopoly because they also own the media. BlackRock and Vanguard hold large interests in pivotal companies, and Vanguard holds a large share of BlackRock. In turn, BlackRock has been called the fourth branch of government by Bloomberg, as they are the only private firm that has financial agreements to lend money to the central banking systems. Aside from world media, the companies controlled by BlackRock and Vanguard span everything from entertainment and airlines to social media and communications. We're experiencing a threat of global slavery of the entire population to these financial interests, unquote. We're going to be talking about BlackRock and Vanguard in coming shows, folks. You need to understand the financial side. I think you got the social and the political side, the power-hungry folks. But we're going to talk about the financial, the shadowy financial folks that are driving this globalist deal, in concert, by the way, with Red China. All right, the next thing I want to talk to you about is psychosis. In fact, in this video, Malone talks about a mass psychosis which has taken over related to COVID. And in fact, it has. So we have all been acquainted with, subject to, encountered people that we are talking to, that we are trying to give information to give facts to about these jabs, about COVID, about the conjuring of this whole nonsense, about the history of COVID, the Chinese, Fauci's funding using our tax dollars, the whole nine yards. I mean, I would bet that every single one of you listening to me, or 99%, have encountered a situation where you are talking to somebody. You are trying to give them information, and it's kind of like talking to a cork. The sound goes in and doesn't come out. It doesn't matter what you tell these folks. They're not going to listen to you. They're not going to believe it. It's almost like they have this big shutter in front of their brain. And that doesn't mean, it doesn't matter whether they have had one jab or two jabs or three jabs. It's a psychosis. When you see people walking around outside by themselves with a mask, it's a psychosis. When you see somebody driving in their car with a mask, it's a psychosis. I mean, the studies are complete. The masks do nothing for you. Zero. In fact, in the Rat-a-tat-tat, there's a story about how the CEOs of major airlines are now saying they want to do away with the mask mandate on airlines because it doesn't do anything. Well, folks, it is a psychosis. Look, Dr. Mercola, Joseph Mercola, Dr. Robert Malone, the gentleman that we just got through discussing what his viewpoints are on the corruption of medical journals, medical science, scientific discourse. And we're going to be talking about another guy here, a guy by the name of Matthias Desmet. He's a Belgian, Mattias Desmet, Desmet. Basically, he has come up with a theory, and I think he is right on. He is right on. We're going to have this video underneath the audio bar also. I encourage you to listen to it. There's a psychological condition of society known as mass formation psychosis. It is an underlying condition that precedes totalitarianism. Not a dictatorship, that's a different thing, but totalitarianism. Under mass formation psychosis, a population enters really a hypnotic type trance, and it makes them willing to sacrifice anything, including their lives and their freedom. And if you look around you, you can see that's happening right now. I mean, it's starting to reverse, but for the last year and a half, the last 2 years, you know what I'm telling you is true. You have seen it. You have heard it. You have felt it with your own eyes, ears, and senses. There's four conditions that have to be in place for a mass formation psychosis to occur. There has to be a lack of bonding within a society. There has to be an experiencing of life as kind of meaningless and senseless. There has to be a widespread kind of free-floating anxiety, a free-floating discontent, and a free-floating frustration and aggression. Now, I know that you have felt these things. I know that you have discussed these things in discussions with others. Once these four conditions are widespread, then this mass formation thing can occur. And it allows, and this is what's really important, it allows totalitarianism to rise and thrive. One of the key strategies to break mass formation and prevent totalitarianism is to speak out against it. I have a feeling many of you listening to me do that, whether or not you've had a jab or two jabs or three jabs. I mean, I know of many people who have gotten the jabs and who are incensed at these mandates, or they are incensed at the coercion. They are incensed at the hard heel of government on everybody's necks. And they know innately that it's part of a much bigger global totalitarianism picture. Dissenters need to join together. And that gives fence-sitters, folks who are going, boy, I know there's something wrong, but I'm just not willing to kind of jump off this fence, who are not yet fully hypnotized, it gives them an alternative to going along with the totalitarians. We need to give those folks who are hypnotized, I mean, you know, the people who wear the mask outside when they're jogging or alone in their car. I mean, we've all seen it. As a little sidelight, so there's a really remote road that goes up to the upper ranches here. And, I mean, if you see one truck in 25 miles, that's a busy day. And it's dirt, and it's winding, and it's potholed, and it's in the inclement weather, it's almost impassable. And about a month ago, I was coming down from the upper ranches, and I passed a truck, had Colorado plates, of course, and there were four guys in that truck. This is in the middle of nowhere, trust me, and they all had masks on. I mean, I almost drove off the road. So we have all seen this, and this absurd, this irrational behavior that we're seeing worldwide in regards to the COVID quote-unquote pandemic, the scamdemic, and its countermeasures, this is that crowd hypnosis. And this mass formation psychosis, to give you a historical perspective, is the explanation for how the Germans accepted the unbelievable atrocities by the Nazi Party in the 1930s. And it's the explanation why so many around the world, I've given you countless examples and countless quotes, why so many around the world support medical apartheid and destruction, literally destruction. Put them in concentration camps, shoot them, you know, whatever, of the unvaccinated now. It's irrational, it's inhumane, and, you know, if you're like me, we kind of wonder how we got here. As it turns out, the psychology of totalitarianism has been studied for decades, and the whole thing is a psychiatric phenomenon that arises when certain conditions exist in a society, and they exist now. There is that lack of social bonding, which was exacerbated intentionally by big tech and the media, cutting off people from communicating to one another. It's driven intentionally by the powers that be. Fauci telling you, don't allow anybody in your house for Christmas that hasn't been vaxxed. And you all need to wear a mask sitting around the Christmas table. This is intentionally driving wedges, intentionally dividing society, intentionally isolating humans from other humans and from family. I mean, nobody wants you to have a good time with your family, folks, because that gives you hope. That gives you comfort. That breaks this hypnotic spell that the media and the globalists and the democratic Marxists and the powers that be and Big Pharma have invested billions and billions of dollars to put you under. Okay, we've been told that contact with others, including members of our own family, could be a death sentence. Oh, we're going to just tip over. And it contributes to people seeing life as purposeless, without purpose, as senseless, okay? It gives you dissatisfaction with your job. Think about the records that have been set over the last year of people quitting their jobs. I've brought you that story. I think 4 or 5 months ago was that 4 million people had quit their jobs. It was like a new all-time record by umpty umpty ump exponential. There was a poll done in 2012. This is pre-scamdemic. 63% of the respondents said they were sleepwalking through their work days. No passion about their work whatsoever. So that's a condition for this mass psychosis. And then we have the events of 2019 and 2020. The questions that surrounded the presidential election. The initial COVID lockdowns. I mean, that added to this confusion, to the uncertainty, which, by the way, it was intended to do. And that resulted in the next condition, free-floating anxiety. And when you have free-floating anxiety and free-floating discontent, then the next thing that happens is that you don't feel that things are right. You know, you feel that things just aren't right. And throughout 2020, it became increasingly apparent to many of us, maybe most of us, that all the systems, or at least the majority of the systems that we have depended on for decades, are broken, and probably broken beyond repair. Our medical system, our voting system, our judicial system, the equality of justice for all. And all those things lead to the last element you need, which is free-floating frustration and aggression. And folks, I don't know about you, But I can tell you, I am frustrated and I am angry. And I'm sure that many of you listening to me feel the same. And know other people, many other people, who feel the same. When you get a large enough chunk of society that is subject to all these discontents, anxieties, frustrations, aggressions, people become obsessed with one thing. And in this case, it was the virus. And of course, driven by mainstream media and big tech and all the other nonsense that's gone on. This singular focus, this obsession, which is what it is, with the base conditions for mass psychosis already in place, allows for a large portion of the population to enter this kind of hypnotic, literally hypnotic state. At least parts of this psychological operation, as we know, were done intentionally by, and I'll quote Malone, quote, some entity that has financial benefit or power to gain from doing this, which gets to the point of global totalitarianism. You know, this is going to tie into my Vanguard and BlackRock discussions over the coming weeks. And when you have that, all you need is a leader or leaders that can convince a significant portion of the disaffected people that they have the answers, that their control, that a loss of freedom in those that are listening to them is best for everyone, right? You present a story in which the cause of the anxiety is identified, and then you offer a strategy for neutralizing that cause. And the cause is the virus. And the cause is also now the unvaccinated or the partially vaccinated. Let me quote Desmet. And he has a book out called Peak Prosperity, by the way. I'm going to give you another book of his in just a moment. Quote, because many people participate in the same strategy to deal with the object of anxiety, a new kind of social bond emerges, a new kind of solidarity. So people feel connected again in a new way. And that's actually the most crucial thing. If you look at the corona crisis and listen to the mainstream narrative, you will hear everything is about solidarity. You have to participate. You have to accept the vaccine. You have to respect social distancing. Because if you don't, you lack citizenship. You show no solidarity. That's the most crucial thing always in mass formation. That's the real reason why people buy into the story, even if it's utterly absurd. It's not because they believe in the narrative. It's because the narrative leads to a new social bond. That's the real reason. There's also another advantage. All the frustration and aggression can be directed at an object, and that object is the people who, for one reason or another, do not want to participate in the mass formation. So you have this very strange situation where people start from a very negative and divisive mental state, a lack of social bond, lack of meaning, meaningful making, free-floating anxiety, and lots of frustration and aggression. They switch from this highly averse mental state to a symptomatic positive state where they feel connected. Their life makes sense again through this heroic struggle with the object of anxiety. That's why people continue to believe in the narrative, even if it is, and it is, utterly absurd. I think that's a great description of this. And then they go on and they talk about the fact there has to be a common enemy, and the common enemy has to be obliterated. The cause for everybody's fear and anxiety and unsettled feelings. Okay, under totalitarian rule, the enemy is anyone, folks, listen carefully, who is not spellbound, who is not in the hypnotic trance. The dissenters are the enemy. In 2021, the unmasked and the unvaccinated are the enemy, okay, along with Trump folks, and along with conservatives, and along with Republicans, all of which are lumped into the same sordid batch of, quote-unquote, the enemy. You know, if you kind of dig deeper in this, okay, the mainstream media, and the Faucis, and the globalists, and the democratic Marxists. Basically what they're telling everybody to get them in line, to give them the warm fuzzies, to get them into this hypnotic mass psychosis trance, is if everybody would just get this experimental jab, COVID would go away. Everybody could get back to feeling safe again. Look, you and I know it makes no sense. It's irrational. It's inhumane. It's unscientific. Not that they care about that. But everybody who is in this mass formation psychosis, they have been taught to believe that it's just that simple. And that's why many of them, wish concentration camps or death on the unmasked or the unvaccinated. Basically, let me quote Malone. Quote, if it seems to you that the rest of the world has gone mad, the truth is they have, unquote. And that is now a greater problem, folks, than any virus that we have ever encountered, this mass formation psychosis. It's a really, really dangerous condition. By the way, both for those who are under the spell and those who are not under the spell. Because the mental intoxication that comes along with this psychosis, it makes people willing to do things that are clearly wrong, utterly immoral. Think about Germany back in the 1930s. Up to and including voluntarily killing their own families and themselves, if they believe it's for the greater good, and that's part of the psychosis, or anybody who is a dissenter. Okay, that is a frightening combination. Desmet said that in a dictatorship, people comply because they fear the dictator. But in a totalitarian regime, mass formation psychosis is really the catalyst for obedience. And this gives the regime kind of extreme power over the individual, as the people who are on this hypnotic trance voluntarily destroy their own families, their lives, themselves, along with the stated enemy, the maskless and the unvaccinated and the Republicans and the conservatives and the folks who like Trump. Desmet believes that global totalitarianism is probably unavoidable at this point. He believes the mass psychosis is that widespread. I'm not going to buy into that just yet. But here's what they suggest you do to counter this stuff. Continue to provide true and accurate information to counter this false spew. Some who aren't like fully hypnotized can still be routed back to sanity. Okay, it can also help to limit the atrocities, and they are atrocities, a totalitarian regime is emboldened to implement. In totalitarianism, folks, atrocities and crimes against humanity increase as dissent decreases. The next thing you can do is you can substitute, and this can be very effective. I've tried it myself, and it really is. Substitute the fear of the virus narrative with discussions that highlight an even greater fear, the fear of totalitarianism. Totalitarianism, I quote, is a bigger boogeyman than the virus is. Losing control to Bill Gates, the World Economic Forum, BlackRock, and Vanguard is a bigger threat than SARS-CoV-2 is for you and your children by far, unquote. Here's some other things you can do very quickly. Join with other dissenters into larger groups. Okay, this gives you the larger majority who aren't fully hypnotized, but maybe too fearful, you know, to go against the grain, an alternative to going along with the totalitarians. Build parallel structures in your local communities. Think globally, act locally. And these structures, you want to design them to kind of heal the four underlying conditions we just talked about. Because if you can take care of healing those structures, that undermines and eventually collapses this mass psychosis formation to occur. And a parallel structure, as an example for you, is any kind of business or organization or technology or movement or creative pursuit that fits within a totalitarian society but is morally outside of it. Okay, parallel structure will result in a parallel culture. And that functions kind of as a sanctuary, a sanity sanctuary with an otherwise upside down world. So the good news is that this can't be sustained forever. Totalitarian regimes fall apart because they destroy themselves from within. Watch what's happening in Congress right now with the Democrats. I mean, it's a kind of a perfect example. Think about the people you've talked to who have gotten the jab, or two jabs, or three jabs, who are absolutely incensed at what the government is trying to foist on everybody, at the mandates, at the edicts, at the punishments. That's what you have to build on. Replace the fear of the virus with the real fear, and it's a legitimate fear, of totalitarian control and loss of individual freedoms. By the way, the book that I'm going to recommend to you, it's not going to be out till January 2022, that's by this Desmet guy, it's called The Psychology of Totalitarianism. I highly recommend that book. Highly recommend that book. All right, let's talk about some of the good things that are happening. I'm not sure I'm going to get to too much rat-a-tat-tat today, but this is a far more important subject. The rat-a-tat-tat we can do about any time, and it changes from week to week, as you know. So let's look at some positive things that are going on. I mean, there's plenty of negative things, for sure. But let's look really big picture, stratospheric, shall we? Look, the Democratic Marxists are what they are. But, you know, up until the days of Trump, they managed to cloak themselves. They managed to be in the closet. They managed to pull the strings in the dark. Now they are out in the open. We know what we're dealing with. We understand who the enemy is. Let's talk about some of the things which have surfaced here that have been going on underneath the surface without our knowledge, particularly as it relates to the education of our kids. You know, the series I did for you, the historical series on education. Well, listen, this critical race theory, this, you know, 1619 project of the New York Times, all that kind of stuff, that type of stuff has been taught for years to our kids. You can see it right now in these Antifa folks that are out in the street. They're the products of the education. They are the products of the educators who were indoctrinated by the educational system. Fortunately for us, that stuff's now out in the open, and people are taking back control of their schools and their school boards and their teachers and their curriculums. If not at the school level, then through homeschool and through educational pod groups that we have talked about. This is all really positive. And the fact that so many parents, particularly women, have been awakened is really positive. Look at what happened in Virginia, because that's what drove it. There is more positives that we can look at right now. There's huge conservative gains in Hispanic and African American community. This is key. This offsets what the Democrats are trying to do with illegal immigration. This ruptures their whole system of creating a class of victims and then stitching those constituencies together as a voting bloc. This is huge. The progressives, folks, have no viable bench of candidates. This is another really positive thing. I mean, the best they can do down in Texas is Beto O'Rourke. And yeah, you know, you want to get involved in that election, you want to send money to Abbott, you want to support the Republicans, and you want to make sure there's no voter fraud. But in reality, Beto, baby, Francis O'Rourke, is a complete nut. Not in his mind, not in the progressive's mind, but in the mind of the great majority of Americans. Remember, you are not alone. We are the majority by a lot, not by a little. And Beto O'Rourke is the best they can do in Texas. Stacey Abrams, who actually is not a bad candidate, but let's face it, a left-wing whackball, an anti-American shyster. She's the best they can do in Georgia. And all the way down the line, they do not have a lot of candidates that are working right now. And they do not have a lot of good candidates. And they don't have a bench to draw from for a presidential election in 2024, much less a bench to draw from for the 2022 elections. That's really positive. So long as you get involved, you put money into these campaigns, you volunteer for groundwork during the elections, and you talk to people, and you get 10 people to the polls, okay? None of this works. All these positives vanish in smoke, a big puff of poof, if you don't get involved and others like you and me don't get involved and stay involved. Here's another positive thing, cancel culture. Cancel culture is starting to crack, folks. People are tired of it. It is a bunch of nonsense. Even Netflix has refused to remove comedians from the airwaves despite the hue and cry by the liberals and the progressives over the jokes that the comedians are doing. You know, they refused to remove Dave Chappelle, for instance. Okay? And I can give you a whole long list. I don't need to. You know that cancel culture is starting to break down. You know that people are tired of the word racist. They're tired of the word racism. I mean, it is losing its effect. It's like the guy who cried wolf far too many times. Not one too many times, but far too many times. Another positive for you. People are waking up to just how incompetent, purposely incompetent, intentionally incompetent, the government is. And people are waking up to the fact that Biden is a cadaver and that he's been being controlled by outside nefarious, insidious, and dark forces. This is really good for what's coming up in 2022. The whole COVID, let me give you another positive, the whole COVID crapola, the conjured crapola of COVID is beginning to break down. Okay, I have a rat-a-tat-tat for you. I'm going to advance a little bit in case we don't reach it. But just in the past week, it's come to light that the CDC has been grossly inflating the jab numbers. I've told you that for months. But now we have the actual facts and figures. They overstated the amount of jabs given in the state of Pennsylvania to seniors by 850,000. There's only 2.3 million seniors in Pennsylvania. If you extrapolate that, and they also did it in Kentucky, there were several other states that were studied. If you extrapolate that over the country, there's 10 to 15 million more Americans who haven't even gotten a single jab than they've been telling us. And there's 10 to 15 to 20 million more Americans who haven't gotten more than one jab than they've been telling us. As I've been telling you, at least 40% of this country has not gotten a single jab. And in my opinion, reading all the articles and all the different things that I do, it's my opinion. I have no math to back it with. There's another at least 10 to 15% who have gotten one jab, and they're not getting any more. And there's another 10 plus or minus percent who have gotten two, and they're not getting any more. And then there's another 10% who have gotten three, and they're not getting any more. I'm talking to people all over the place. I talked to 1,500, probably 2,000 people in Las Vegas at the NFR book signing down there, which went great. I talked to countless people that fall into those categories. And they're already talking about the fourth booster. In fact, another rat-a-tat-tat, Pfizer, has come out and said, well, I'll go into detail when I get to that segment, but Pfizer has basically said in the last week, the CEO and all the high mucky-mucks, well, you know, COVID is here to stay, and within a couple of years, it'll be okay, and it won't be much. But, you know, you're going to need a jab every year because it's going to be like the flu, because there'll always be these variations. I mean, you can see where this is going. You can see where this was going a year and a half ago, and more people are seeing it. And the punch of COVID is dissipating. Many people are losing their fear. And you can help people lose their fear following those steps I went over with you a few minutes ago when I was talking about the psychosis of COVID. That's a really good thing because COVID was their lever of control. They tried to rush everything through because they knew there's limited time, particularly in the United States, which is a rebellious country by nature. And they lost on the time frame. Time is now working against them, not for them. Time is no longer their ally. And people aren't going to go into lockdowns, and people aren't going to get forced to take this jab, and they're going to have a real problem on their hands if they think they're going to be deporting Americans to concentration camps like they are in Australia and Austria. I mean, good luck with that. I mean, you know, this is a different planet in this country, and it's an armed planet, right? The Second Amendment, that red line in the sand. The next thing that is a good thing is that we're starting to see the truth emerge on these jabs. What's in them, what beneficial effect, if any, they have, and for what a small limited time that effect, if any, may be. And we're beginning to understand that people who have had COVID and survived, which is 99.84% of all the people who have had COVID, have better immunity based on a whole range of international studies, I've brought them to you, than people who have the jab. There's some differentiation of opinion now. Malone, I'll take the people that I've been talking about. Malone thinks that there is a chance that if you've had COVID, you can still get COVID, but it's going to be basically a non-event because of the natural antibodies, your innate immune response to it. Deschmet and McCullough, this other great doctor, they don't think you can get it at all. Many of the studies say that having had COVID, you are basically bulletproof against a coronavirus. I mean, I don't know the answers to these questions, but the bottom line is everybody's agreed that if you have had COVID, you're basically safe from either getting it or getting it and having anything severe going on. People are beginning to understand that. The Democratic Party, another positive. You know how totalitarianism breaks down from within? We were just talking about that, one of de Smet's theories. Well, we're watching that right now, folks. The Democratic Party is splintering. The splintering has been going on for quite a while, but now it's out in the open. Manchin basically telling the Democrats, the Democratic Marxists, and Biden to shove it on this Build Back Better plan is one example. But there's many others. The battles between Democrats over redistricting in blue states is another one. I mean, there's a real tug of war in the Democratic Party right now, which weakens them and which makes many of their seats more susceptible to flipping in the 2022 election. And I think as a last positive, there are others, but the last one we're going to cover in this show, as a last positive, I think people, particularly those who have not been subjected to this mass psychosis, this hypnotic trance that they really tried hard to put you under, I think you have your footing now. I sense that there's a lot of people who have kind of looked up and said, I get it. I get what's going on, and I'm not doing it, right? What are those words that I suggest you repeat in the mirror every day? There's a lot more people repeating these or similar words to themselves every day. I will muster. I will stand. I will not comply. I will never give in. I will never stop fighting. I will join with those in these United States and across the globe who think as I do and love freedom. And we will win. More and more folks are coming to that realization. More and more folks, and I talk to them often and I get emails from them, are resolved to the fact that if worst comes to worst, they will do what needs to be done to protect themselves, their family, their freedom, the Constitution, and this country. Well, I'll tell you what, I think we have time for a couple quick rat-a-tat-tats, and there's some really good ones. What we don't cover, we'll cover next week. By the way, next week we're going to cover on what you can do specifically to detox, whether you've had one jab or two jabs or three jabs, some really specific things from doctors. Of course, you should check with your own medical professionals. I think that'll be really interesting for you. We're going to be talking about some legal things which are going on a whole bunch of different levels and planes in a whole bunch of different places. We're going to be talking about gun control, which we just didn't have time to even come close to today because there's a lot of nasty things going on there. Understand that with Build Back Better at least temporarily shot down, the Democratic Marxists, always chomping at the bit to do what they can to destroy the country and capitalism and freedom, are going to be focusing on other things. You know, reparations and gutting the Second Amendment and gutting the First Amendment, free speech, and a whole bunch of other things. You know, they're going to redirect their energy and attention to other places until they circle back around and take another chew at the apple of the Build Back Better socialist welfare plan. So all the high mucky mucks in Globalistville and Fauciville have been sued in the world court. That's right. This is kind of Nuremberg 2.0, an outfit out of Great Britain, is bringing the suit. I'm going to get into the details with you next week because it is a nasty lawsuit, crimes against humanities, and they have named everybody. I mean, they are not screwing around. Where it goes, I don't know, but it's going to go somewhere, and it's nice to see. In addition, there's been a huge class action suit filed here in the United States, and it has named many of the same people that this other suit out of Britain, whole different outfit, has named in the suit in the world court, also for treason and crimes against humanity. I'm going to be telling you how to get involved in that class action suit next week, and you can, financially and as a plaintiff, as part of the class that's suing the Faucis and the Gateses and the Whitmers, and it's a long list of people that they have named as defendants, and, you know, good for them. Good for them. Inflation. Look, you're being told that inflation is the highest of 40 years and this, that, and the other, and it's 7%. Folks, It's the highest in 50 or 60 years, back to the 1970s. You know, remember Jimmy Carter and the inflation then? And it's actually right around 15% at realshadowstats.com, realstatistics.com. You can look up all the real numbers, not the government foofy numbers. 15%. Right now, half of all families with an annual income of less than $50,000 felt pushed to cut back on holiday spending by as much as 20%. And this is a study that's done by America's Research Group. It's called America's Research Group. 6 out of every 10 Americans believe gift prices, holiday gift prices and shopping, are higher than usual this year. And boy, are they right. On the other hand, you hear the President Cadaver and his crew talking about how, oh, sales are up. And, well, yeah, you know, if you have 15% inflation and sales are up 5% from last year or whatever, where are you at really? Oh, that's right, a 10% loss in terms of real dollar value. Yeah, you bet. So the average American's purchasing power, the average American family's purchasing power, has gone down by $3,500 in the last year. Wow. There was a great quote by Richard Rahn, R-A-H-N. He is the head of the Institute for Global Economic Growth, very well-known economist. Let me give you this quote. The folks in government want you to know that even though many prices such as oil are up 45% and food up 22% over the last year, there are other very important products such as toys, whose prices have been falling, down 27% over the past year. So, if you buy more toys and less gasoline and food, your real income in terms of purchasing power will remain the same. I mean, he said that tongue-in-cheek, but I thought it was a great kind of put things in perspective quote. Right now, the United States, so that you know, is number one. This is based on the International Monetary Fund report. Number one amongst the top 35 developed nations to have the highest level of inflation. The highest level of inflation out of the top 35 developed nations, we have that dubious distinction, shall we say. Dubious distinction. So, how about a few more rat-a-tat-tats? These next ones are kind of interlinked. They'll make you both grimace and grin, I promise you. So, President Cadaver, you know, on Tuesday, he wanted to give a heartwarming and warm and fuzzy message to Americans. So, what he had to say was, and he was talking about Omicron, by the way, and you're going to love how this ends. Quote, it's here now, and it's spreading, and it's going to increase. We're looking at a winter of severe illness and death. Death, I tell you, for the unvaccinated, for themselves, their families, and the hospitals they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated and you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death, unquote. How's that for a warm, fuzzy Christmas message from your president? Oh, I'm quivering here. Here's a great little sidelight. He's on Air Force One. One of his staff, who was sitting next to him for 30 minutes while on Air Force One, and who's fully vaccinated and fully boosted, was tested positive for Omicron COVID when he walked off this plane. And I hear, through my sources, that President Cadaver is actually showing some symptoms. And President Cadaver, last time I checked, supposedly is fully vaccinated, you know, jab one, jab two, and the booster shot. And I bet he's rolling up his sleeve for the fourth one as we talk. And then, you don't think these folks are in cahoots, huh? Pfizer executives are suggesting that COVID is going to get milder. But it's going to be a permanent part of our lives, folks. We're never going to be rid of this. We're never going to be rid of the stress and the anxiety and the psychosis. But it's going to start resembling the yearly flu. And Pfizer believes that the pandemic, which, by the way, never really occurred, listen to my previous shows, will be endemic by 2024. Oh, wait a second. Something goes on in 2024. Oh, yes, a presidential election. Ah, it's amazing how all these coincidences occur. And so that's going to be the end of the pandemic and a, quote, lessening of most of the danger, unquote. Ooh, if I can just make it, if all of you could just make it to 2024, we'll be scot-free. We're going to be home free, folks. Just 3 more Christmases and you'll be good to go. I mean, wow, unbelievable. By the way, Pfizer says they're going to have to develop new vaccines in the future, just like they do with the flu, because, you know, this pesky COVID thing, even though the danger is going to be lessened by the time of the next presidential election, well, you know, we got to stick a needle in your arm because we want to make sure. Oh, yes, we do. Because your health is our first concern, ladies and gentlemen. And then, by the way, in his speech on Tuesday, President Cadaver, he was urging Americans to get their vaccines and booster shots because he knows, just like I revealed to you today and have told you for 6 months, the CDC, the FDA, Fauci, and the rest of the lying minions in the government have been totally lying to you, along with their media henchmen, about how many people have any jabs, or one jab, or two jabs, or three jabs. In fact, they've been lying like by 40 or 50 or 60 million people. It's kind of a big lie, you know. Well, anyway, he directed very specific criticism at conservative media. I think he was talking to me. Oh, I am crushed. I am hurt. My heart weeps that President Cadaver is upset with little old Wyoming Hayseed me. And he says that conservative media is working hard to inform U.S. citizens of bad things and wrong things. Actually, I think we're all the conservative media that I know and myself, we're working to inform you of all the facts, you know, the ones that are being hidden and the ones that are being lied about, so that you, as Americans, can make your choices, whatever they are. I'm behind you. You are a fellow American. No jab, one jab, two jabs, three jabs, jabs infinitum, whatever you want to do. It's up to you. But at least be informed so that your consent or your decision is informed. You know, kind of like the Nuremberg Code says, kind of like federal statute very clearly states when using an emergency use drug. Manchin, let's talk about him real quickly, and I think that'll probably wrap up the show. So it took a lot of courage for him to do what he did. And I'm not a complete fan of Joe Manchin. I mean, he's voted with the Democrats on lots of nasty stuff plenty of times. But in this case, he seems to have found his footing. And he has taken a brutal beating from the corporate media and members of his own party and President Cadaver and the White House, etc. And he said something very interesting on a Sunday talk show. In fact, it was, what, 5 days ago, I guess. Quote, I'm not blaming anybody. I knew where they were, and I knew what they could and could not do. They just never realized it because they figured, surely to God, we can move one person. Surely we can badger and beat one person up. Surely we can get enough protesters to make that person feel uncomfortable enough, and they'll just say, okay, I'll vote for anything and just quit. Well, guess what? I'm from West Virginia. I'm not where they're from. And they can just beat the living crap out of people and think they'll be submissive, period. No way. I kind of like that quote. Go, Joe, go. And by the way, I'm going to post on the Facebook page, facebook.com/ontherightsideradio. Please throw us a like. We got all sorts of great stuff posted there virtually every day. How you can support Joe Manchin. Because obviously the Democrats are going to try and cut him off at the knees financially. And, you know, somebody who takes a stand, even though you may not agree with the lots of other stuff he's done, deserves to have our support. He is first an American and second a Democrat. At least in this case. You folks have a absolutely fabulous holiday. The next time we talk together will be actually New Year's Day. Wow, pretty cool. And so I will have talked to you on Christmas and New Year's. I'm going to have all the stuff I was telling you about that we're going to cover. And I'm going to have my prognostications, which I've done annually for many years, for the upcoming year, 2022. You don't want to miss those. I'll give you my scorecard on last year's prognostications, which unfortunately the score is pretty high, but that's not really great for the country or for you and me. And in the meantime, enjoy your family, enjoy your friends, enjoy the holidays, wherever you may be, in these United States or around the globe. You are not alone. We are not alone. We are the majority, and we will win. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Talk at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.